Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Matt Spiegel, and I can't wait to bring you Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. It's a job so special that even Joe Buck told us he will probably go back to it.
I'm 53, basically 54. I think it's too early to say nevers at this point in my life. I think at some point I'll get the itch again.
Incredible guests sharing great stories from your favorite teams coming this year. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North with your hosts, David Haw and Dan Weiderer.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome to the Take the North podcast. I'm David Haw from the Mullin Haw Show on 670 The Score. Dan Weiderer from the Chicago Tribune is in Detroit, as you see, in pursuit of Caleb Williams and the ninth overall pick. We are here in the midst of draft week, a couple days away, Thursday night, the big night. And Dan, we heard from Ryan Poles today and Ian Cunningham at Hallis Hall. We have some stadium intrigue and drama with a press conference and unveiling scheduled for Wednesday. Where do you want to start? You were at the Ryan Poles press conference, and I guess we can begin there. I thought that hearing from Ryan Poles, there's excitement at Hallis Hall. There's a sense of enthusiasm, maybe optimism, that is different from previous drafts.
Ryan Poles tried to do the NFL a solid by not tipping the pick, so to speak, even though the Bears have been tipping the pick for about 6 weeks now, David. And so while they would not come out and expressly say that Caleb Williams is their man at number one, the whole world knows that Caleb Williams is their man at number one, and everything he said about the quarterback today indicated as much. I do think there is a sense of optimism, a sense of opportunity here. I think that guys like Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham work year-round for days like Thursday to be able to put their fingerprints on the biggest part of roster building, and now they get their opportunity to do it. The first pick's easy. Nine's a little more difficult. We'll get into that in a little bit, and then obviously you try to fill the draft class out with two or three other guys in the later stages, and then you put together that undrafted rookie class. But, yeah, I think you're right that there's just a buzz inside Hallis Hall right now that's palpable, that's genuine, and that's warranted.
What was the biggest overall takeaway, if you had one, from a session that I think didn't include many specifics? We'll get into some of the things that stood out, but did you have any sense beyond the mood, beyond the positivity, beyond that you came away with?
Well, this isn't a grand thing, but I think it's worth noting because the Bears go into this draft with only four picks, and we've sort of gotten this sense recently that Ryan's comfortable with that, and he doubled down on that on Tuesday, essentially saying that based on two things, the way that this draft unfolds and the way most talent evaluators believe it falls off in the middle of round five, as we've talked about, coupled with the strength of the Bears roster right now, that they don't feel obligated to make this a player heavy draft class if opportunity doesn't present to do that. So if they wind up selecting only four guys, I think they will sleep well. If they get a fifth guy by trading back once and are able to add a pick somewhere where it makes sense, they'll do that. But there didn't seem to be any sort of urgency whatsoever to try to pad out this draft class by getting more numbers when they understand that it's going to be defined largely by 1 and 9. And based on the way this draft board falls, they feel like they're in a good position.
Generally speaking, I heard a very confident front office. And I wondered if I find myself wondering if, number one, there's a difference between overconfidence and kind of enthusiasm for what's about to happen. And I hoped that I wasn't hearing a couple guys who were maybe marking the end of a rebuild before it's actually over. And I wanted to also make sure that I wasn't hearing maybe some people talk about the finality, because I think we're still very much in the process of the Bears regaining respectability, Dan. And I felt like when Ryan Poles answered a question, something about, well, this team is going to be very hard to make. I liked that in terms of that context. But I think that when Ian Cunningham talked about, you know, somebody asked him about feeling how the, did you make it through the rebuild? I was like, not yet.
Right.
Not yet. That question, I understand it, but it's not really the time to ask it because they're not there yet.
I love your phraseology there. And I would love to print some Take the North t-shirts with the help of someone that just say not yet. Because look, like you and I have spent years now on this podcast saying that one of the things the Bears do really well is fail with more grace than anyone in the league. Right. And another thing that Chicago and the Bears do really well is proclaim success when you're just sort of sniffing it. You're not yet there. And so not yet is a great way to phrase this, because I look, like I'm writing a piece for Thursday night that has to be pre-written so that when Caleb Williams is drafted, we can push the button on it and go. And one of the lines that I have in there is that this is a celebration of opportunity, not a celebration of achievement. And I think that both the Bears and Caleb Williams have to understand that's what you're celebrating Thursday night is you're celebrating opportunity. The achievement comes up the road and not yet. Like you have to accomplish things before you start taking victory laps. And if we haven't learned that over the last decade, over the last two decades, over the last three decades, then people are never going
to
learn it.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great thing to remember. And I hope that all of the Bears fan base does, and all of our audience does. It's not really trying to point out anything negative, but that's just the kind of reinforcing that we have been here before.
And like 2022, right? Like with the whole Justin Fields thing in 2022, you and I were saying, not yet, not yet, not yet. Let's see it more consistently. And people were going, ah, it's too exciting to not declare yet. You know, they were saying yet. And we were saying not yet.
Preseason 2019, you know, preseason, the first 8 weeks of Mark Trestman's tenure. I mean, you can go back to all kinds of examples. Unfortunately, you know, the postseason of 2006, the next training camp when they had 21 or 22 starters back. You're right about being on a Chicago thing.
It's a little one. The Bears got to 5-6 in John Fox's first year and were playing with a type of grit where it was like, now they've got a real coach in here and they're on a little bit of a roll. And this is, you know, the end of season one. And just imagine what John Fox in year two is going to be like, since he was like that in Denver, since he was like that in Carolina. And then it turned out to be not yet and not ever.
Too many examples to cite. That's why it's important that Ryan Poles surround himself with people that will tell him the truth. And I think when you talk about, he referenced, and there was a funny moment during the presser about not surrounding himself with yes men, or Ian Cunningham wasn't his yes man. And I think it also brought up a bigger, broader context about who are the people surrounding Ryan Poles, you know, Matt Eberflus, Kevin Warren having dinner with him before he traded Justin Fields, and Ian Cunningham, who's ever present with him at his side. And I think there was a good exchange there when Ryan Poles addressed just talking about the people who push him during this time of the year.
So I think the big thing is you talk about whatever process you're in, if it's a draft of kind of what your standards are, how you want to operate, what you're looking to accomplish, and you lay that out in some type of it's a conversation, but an outline. And there's always situations, oftentimes there's situations that start to push you outside of what you said you wanted to accomplish, what we all agreed as a coaching staff, a front office, what we want to accomplish. And there's things that happen that start to push you outside those lines. And with all of those things happening, sometimes as a leader, you do get distracted. There are things that kind of pull you outside. Maybe we shouldn't do this. Maybe we need to switch gears. And you need people like Ian, like Flus, like Kevin, to say, hey, man, like, we want to accomplish this. We want to stay in these lines. We want to do it this way. And once they kind of see that you're getting off that track, to nudge you back into where you should be. I think I've been fortunate and blessed enough to have the skill set to take in that information, not to take it personal, not to say, well, I'm running the show. Like, it's all about what I want to do. It's listening to people that you trust so that you stay in the lines of doing things that you, how you want to do it and how you want to accomplish your goals.
I will say what happened to stand out to me, Dan, is that it made me think about, okay, Ryan Poles sounds like the same guy consistently, and he has really developed what I think is a pretty predictable discipline in the way that he approaches things and talks about problem solving and planning and objectives and priorities. And I think that's impressive for a young executive. This is his first time on the job. It's in a big market, a lot of expectations. But I think that when I hear him explain himself, I continue to be a little bit more impressed each time just with the, how measured he seems to come across.
Well, you hit on it there. It's leadership discipline, right? And it's making sure that you keep your main goals the main goals and your big picture the big picture, even as emotion and circumstance tempt you to do things differently than you might want to. You know, and so to have people around you that are able to consistently remind you of that, to have your own emotional intelligence, which Kevin Warren has highlighted in Ryan Poles several times, allows you to stay on course and stay on track without getting, I think his words there were something like coloring outside the lines or working outside the lines. And so that's important. And I think it's important that Ryan feels as comfortable as he does with the team he has around him, whether it's Matt Eberflus, whether it's Kevin Warren, whether it's Ian Cunningham. Ryan's always been very forthright in his, I guess, enjoyment of feedback, his thirst for direction. And to have those things married up is it's a big deal, you know. And so you talk about those things and you think about how big decisions need to be made and the factors that need to be in place to make them well. It starts with processes. It starts with feedback. It starts with asking the right questions and then pursuing the answers to those questions. The Bears feel like they're in a healthy place to me. And I'm not one that just throws those compliments around, as you know, recklessly and just praises them for things that they trumpet from the podium. They feel like they're actually in a very healthy place of doing business and having a target and going after that target without being rash about anything that they do.
A year ago, I think we were talking about the aftermath of the trade with the Panthers and how he talked about wanting to do that and pull the trigger on that because it was almost like creating this anxiety that was very difficult to deal with the longer he had that pick. And I think those were the signs maybe a year ago where some critics might have been pointing out, we might have been among them, said, well, you know, that's kind of an experience and that, boy, that's really something to acknowledge. I just wonder, as he has grown on the job, now you have seen, you know, there's some really big trades and moves in the past year. Besides Ryan Bates, which I think is part of this year's draft class, you look at the Montez Sweat and the Keenan Allen move specifically, and those are some big deals that I think are going to pay off for the Bears in the short and long term. Do you think that he's become more comfortable taking risks in the past year? Is that just a rhetorical question because the answer is obvious? And do you think he takes any of that kind of new emboldened self into the draft night on Thursday?
Look, I think he's just become more comfortable in doing what he thinks is right, you know, and I think that's a big part of this job. It doesn't always work out, but you have to do it with conviction and confidence and then make sure that it's not just blind conviction and confidence. And that's where that support system comes into play, because if you have people that aren't yes men, people that will give you honest feedback, people that will tell you you're being foolish or imprudent when you're being foolish and imprudent, it creates those guardrails that sometimes may not have existed in the past. I think Ryan really has grown into this job. I think he's grown on the job. And I remember talking to him shortly after he was hired about his interview processes before he became an NFL general manager and understanding through those processes that he had what it took from sort of a, I don't want to say maturity standpoint, but just from that leadership intelligence standpoint to make big moves, to feel comfortable with the big moves, to be able to align himself and position himself for success with those big moves. You're not always going to hit on everything. We know what the Chase Claypool trade was, right? And we know that didn't deter him the following year from doing another thing that he thought was right. So again, I think this speaks to the emotional intelligence that Ryan has. I think another example that David, that came up today was the fact that the Bears sent players out to dinner with Caleb Williams on his top 30 visit. And Ryan and his group sat in a different room at the restaurant in Lake Forest. And it was just his way, his touch of saying, look, chemistry is important to me. Player involvement is important to me. Feedback is important to me. Let's let these guys get around them, offer us some of their takes on what this dude is like, and then we can make the most informed decision for this organization. And obviously they felt very comfortable with the feedback they got from that meeting as well.
Though he was not going to admit that. He stayed away from that. That was kind of a funny exchange as Mark Potash pushed him on that, of course. Thanks, Potsy. And
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Caleb Williams will be the guy, even though he wouldn't say so or acknowledge it today. We all understand why. And it was fun, too, also to hear him address, you know, Caleb Williams talked about wanting to play 20 years, as he told the Pivot and Ryan Clark. He wanted to win 8 championships because Tom Brady has 7. And Ryan Poles was asked about those big goals that Caleb Williams has, and this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I love it. I think we all should have huge goals. We have huge goals here, won multiple championships, and that's what we shoot for. You're more intentional when you have these goals that you're shooting. You have to live a certain way. You have to practice a certain way. You have to go about your business a certain way in order to accomplish those. So if everything else is aligned underneath that, that gets me excited.
As it should, as everyone should be. I do think he handled that pretty well. And I think that it's good to be ambitious, even though he doesn't have to, you know, promise, overpromise and underdeliver. I think everyone would be happy with one, but I did like the way that he processed that question.
Yeah, no question. And they've obviously gotten to a point where they're comfortable and confident in what Caleb Williams has told them about his approach. Now they're going to have to observe it firsthand for the next 4 years before, you know, you have to take the next step in your relationship together. But they certainly are forecasting that he's going to be able to handle the transition in a way that's mature, and that drive is backed by action, which is something that absolutely has to happen at that position specifically.
He talked about the Hollywood thing, and he talked about it was almost like something they had talked about amongst themselves. And that also made me think about what Jalen Johnson had said. So it made me wonder if they had talked to other players about the Hollywood thing with Caleb Williams and how he's coming from essentially Hollywood to Chicago. Yeah. And how that might be a factor. What'd you take out of that?
Well, look, that's part of what I talked to Ryan Poles about in Orlando last month, because the Jalen Johnson interview did resonate. There's a 68-second bit or bite from a 25-minute interview that went viral on social media. And it was one player's sincere reaction, curious on whether the rookie quarterback that was going to be coming into his building had a little bit of a air about him, right? You see a guy living in a penthouse overlooking the stadium of Southern Cal and driving around in a sports car while he's still in college. And you go, like, is this dude all about the flash? Is he all about the glitz and glamour? And what Ryan's research and the Bears intel has produced is that Caleb took advantage of NIL opportunities that were there for him that obviously weren't there for previous generations of people in his position, set himself up for success, not only in college, but for the long haul. But it isn't backed by this personality that craves the spotlight, that craves being in all the fanciest clubs, that's trying to become an influencer on social media, that is doing everything for the approval of strangers out there in the public. And so I think that's why it's important to get other players out to dinner with him, for them to get to interact with him early, often, and make their own impressions. But I thought what Jalen said was fair, because it's from a far perception of a guy that you've got to work through, because there are some misnomers about who Caleb Williams is that have been perpetuated through the pre-draft process. And now it's up to every one of us, us included, David, to kind of draw our own conclusions of who he is from our firsthand interactions with him, which are going to obviously escalate this week.
Yeah, obviously. And they must have liked what they saw and found out, because they concluded, I don't want to say rather quickly, but they certainly decisively, that he was the guy, even though they didn't want to admit it or not. And you can speak to this better than I can, because you were doing the deep dives in the 2017 draft when the Bears organization, you know, did Matt maybe do as much due diligence as they probably should have with the Deshaun Watson, Mitch Trubisky, and Patrick Mahomes draft. And so we heard from Ryan Poles today addressed the fact that, you know what, there was one quarterback that visited Hallis Hall and only one, and this was why.
Yeah, I would say the different prospects are kind of the journey to collect all that information is different for everyone. There's guys on our board that are high that didn't come in for a 30 visit, that we've had other touch points. Our networks in the building know the player inside and out that we really, really trust. You had the combine. There's different kind of touch points. You don't necessarily have to bring everybody in on a visit.
See, now he can say that, and his predecessor didn't do that, so he doesn't realize. I mean, he may realize it, but it doesn't really matter. I think everyone's kind of knew what was going on here. But what was your reaction to that, knowing what you know from your past reporting and previous drafts?
For me personally, this is layered, and I struggle with it because I don't have a problem with the way the Bears handled this process. I'm trying not to be contradictory about it because we obviously skewered Ryan Poles and Josh Lucas and that regime for not doing all of the homework that they could have and probably should have done in the 2017 draft class. That one felt like there was a little more gray to it, that there wasn't an obvious top choice in that quarterback class. I was very forthright going into that draft that if I were in the head chair at Hallis Hall, I would have drafted Deshaun Watson in that draft. And so the fact that the Bears didn't spend the same amount of time with him doing the homework with a private workout, with a private dinner, seemed a little bit bothersome from a guy that a lot of people thought could be a difference maker at the next level. Now, they did do that homework with Trubisky and Mahomes, and they actually graded Mahomes favorably. And I do think that that's one of those things that kind of lingers out there, that the Bears totally overlooked Patrick Mahomes in 2017. They didn't. They had him as their number two quarterback on the board. They had him in their top cloud on the draft board and were very comfortable with who he was as a player, but they felt way stronger about Mitch Trubisky because they felt he was a safer pick, and it was a total misplay. That's off to the side of the question you're asking. Like, I feel like the Bears did spend time at Jaden Daniels' pro day. They did go to Ann Arbor for J.J. McCarthy's pro day. They did meet with these guys, as Ryan mentioned, at the combine and other places. And so when you are locked in on a quarterback that clearly seems to have distinguished himself through the eyes of most talent evaluators in the league as a separator from those other guys, then I think it's understandable. The other thing is that you do also have to pick at number nine, and you have limited time and limited resources, and you've got to do your homework on the number nine overall pick in a way that most years you're not trying to juggle two top 10 picks and try to spend all that time figuring out who goes with each one. So I don't know. Maybe I get your feedback on this one, because I don't have a problem with the way they handled it. And I hope I don't listen back to this in 3 or 4 years and go, why didn't I ask more questions about why they didn't do more homework on Jaden Daniels or Drake May or J.J. McCarthy?
If one of these rookies has a better season next year, then I think if one of these has a better season than Caleb Williams, then I think it will be maybe a fair question to revisit. But I think the gap between Caleb Williams and the rest of the field is wider now than it was in 2017 going into the draft between Mahomes, Watson, and Trubisky. Mahomes became what he became, but going into the draft, nobody was saying that he was capable of doing what he was doing. If people are saying that they did,
one group of people did, and they worked in Kansas City in Chiefs headquarters.
Chiefs, yeah, and that's why Andy Reid got a contract extension to 2029. He's going to be the richest coach ever, and he's going to win more games than anybody. But I think when you talk about our evaluating and what to expect and due diligence, it was maybe more negligent not to do it thoroughly in 2017. This year, this pre-draft process, it's almost like in the name of efficiency, when you know, you know.
Also, 2017, one of the fatal flaws was the absolute dysfunctional disconnect between the front office and the coaching staff. There was not the level of communication and meetings and back and forth between those two groups. And that was sort of the kink in that process that sent it all spiraling. When your head coach doesn't know until an hour before the draft that you're going to be selecting a quarterback in that draft, there's problems with your process. There's problems with your leadership from above, you know? And so there were serious organizational flaws exposed in 2017 that don't seem to exist in this current structure. And so maybe that's why there's a little bit more comfort, because you know there is that cohesion, you know there is that communication, and you know there's just an ability to get multiple groups of people on the same page through discourse, which the Bears have clearly done in this situation.
So let's talk about the ninth pick, because there's a lot of conversation about that, some dodging of questions, obviously, from Ryan Poles. I also should report that you're in Detroit, but so And you just landed there. So did Roma Adunze and Caleb Williams on the same flight, according to their Twitter feeds. And that was fun. Can they both take the same flight to Chicago? Maybe we can arrange that, Dan.
With me. Maybe they can fly back with me on Friday morning, back in the back of Delta coach or whatever I'm taking on that day. I did love that those two guys acknowledged it in social media and had fun with it today. Not only that, David, but Roma Adunze made reference to something we talked about on our Combine podcast when he was asked at the Combine if he was on a plane and it was going down and he was the only one that could possibly fly it and save it. Would he be capable of landing it? And he, remember at the Combine, he said, no way, all souls of parents. And today he said he could fly the plane and get Caleb to Detroit safely. So he's got more confidence in his pilot skills there. But that's like next level humor there that for me, like, it hit the sweet spot. And it's why now I want them to draft Roma Adunze on Thursday, just for my own enjoyment.
That would be fun. And I do think if I, as we get closer to Thursday, that is the way I would feel like is the smartest way to go if everything falls into place the way it should. We can talk about, you know, moving up to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. in some scenarios. And you can talk about other scenarios, trading back or taking a defensive guy. But I do think conventional wisdom says to me that if they drafted Roma Adunze and he's there on the board at 9, that makes the most sense for everybody. And they would not regret that. Not just because they're fun on Twitter.
Well, they obviously would make their quarterback happy with that pick, right?
Like
he's made a public endorsement here. And so that's part of this process. Look, like, this number 9 pick can go a number of different ways. I think you've been on record with exclamation points saying, like, it's going to be hard to screw it up, right? Like, you're going to wake up Friday morning and whoever they select there, you're going to go, makes sense to me, you know, and fits a need and helps them get better. Ryan obviously mentioned on Tuesday that they did those group studies within the building of breaking up people into groups and saying, make the case for an offensive lineman, make the case for a defensive lineman, make the case for a receiver. And really, it didn't seem like that drew them to one specific conclusion other than that a lot of different teams have built a lot of different ways and that if you find the right guy, you're going to be fine. And so I think that's part of what this is about, because all three of those positions, now some of those have multiple positions folded within them, are very, very valuable to try to build this team out. And I think they feel really good about the crop of prospects that will be there for them.
So that brings us to what Ryan Poles was asked today about the edge rusher possibility at 9 versus the defensive tackle possibility, the interior guy. Obviously, that would be Byron Murphy in that situation, or maybe if you trade down. But I think the Bears could take the first defensive player off the board, possibly. And if you look at the edge, you've got choices between Latu, probably, Jared Verse, likely, also Dallas Sanders. Those are probably the three guys whose names most commonly come up. And Ryan Poles, I'm sorry, Dallas Turner. When they talk about the edge rusher, and Ryan Poles was asked about, you know, what about the defensive tackle spot, which has eluded the Bears under Matt Eberflus, versus the edge rusher? How do you weigh one against the other? And this is what he had to say.
Yeah, we've talked about inside and outside. Both are multipliers. Generally speaking, I would say the inside guy has the shortest path to the quarterback. So therefore, like, if you have, and we both have lived with really good elite players that are in the inside, and it changes everything. And it opens up a lot for other teams as well. So, having that interior rush is probably a preference when you have an outside guy. It makes it really difficult to scheme up.
Go ahead.
I have two reactions to this, because they're both very different. The first one is that he mentions him and Ian and the experiences they've had with disruptive interior pass rushers. That's Chris Jones in Kansas City. It's Fletcher Cox in Philadelphia. And those are guys that obviously they've lived and had experience with that made a difference for defenses that have gone on to play for Super Bowls. The second reaction to that, David, is, why are you telling us this? And this is where I get into the sort of the April asking that question repeatedly, like, why are you telling us this publicly? And the reason I ask it today is because Matt Eberflus offered that up in Orlando last month as well, where he said the pass rush doesn't only have to come through the edge. We'd really love to get something inside. And so part of me is saying, are they trying to advertise this because they really want a receiver to fall to them at number 9, and they want anybody that's interested in Byron Murphy to jump above them to go get him in the top 8 picks that then would push a receiver down to them at 9. And so you play both sides of that coin. Like, are they really interested in interior pass rush, or are they really interested in propagating the notion that they're going to be after Byron Murphy, and if somebody wants him, they might want to come up and get him?
Well, I think that's really good insight, because I wondered the same thing. I coupled it with due respect, the fact that Brad Biggs, who knows the Bears organization as well as anybody, talked about Byron Murphy in Sunday's Tribune as a guy that is a viable option with the Bears at number nine, and talked about what they need in that. And, you know, he talks to people too. And I think the more you hear about, boy, it's a quicker path to the quarterback and Flusie at the owners' meetings. You want, and you know what? If they drafted the next Chris Jones or the next Fletcher Cox,
yeah,
take them. But I think that it makes you believe that maybe they want us to think that, or they want people to think that, because, okay, so why? And, you know, well, you're right, because maybe that would mean that somebody would swoop in and maybe at eight or whatever and get that guy before the Bears do. And then there they are, voila. And all of a sudden, Roma Dunze is flying the McCaskey's private jet. So I think that is one option and one possibility. And I also think that I don't want to say it would be disappointed, but I think of all the options that we've talked about, if the Bears stayed at nine and drafted a defensive tackle, I would think you'd still celebrate a good draft, but I don't know that it would be as exciting as some of these other possibilities.
By the way, just a little aside on what you said there, I had joked a couple months ago that the only level of quarterback hell that the Bears haven't reached is having their quarterback that they want at number one overall force his way to a different city via trade. I was wrong. The level of hell that they haven't reached is having the number nine pick, who's a wide receiver, fly the private jet and crash it with both the number one and number nine pick on it. Okay. That would be bad. Sorry, I digress. Where was I going with the defensive tackle thing? You asked a question there at the end.
I think that would be the least exciting option of all of them, because they do have two young defensive tackles that they're in the midst of developing. They do have some options there, and they don't have an edge rusher opposite Montez Sweat that necessarily scares anybody or makes it thing that they're going to have to game plan against. So defensive tackle, of all of the possibilities, if they stay at nine, would to me be the least plausible option.
But if you take them at their word and they truly believe that the complement of a great outside guy like Sweat and a great three tech can really turn your defense into something forceful and disruptive, then maybe there is something there. I'll ask you this. You were here the last time the Bears played for a Super Bowl. That front four, where was the teeth of that front four, right? Like, Tommy Harris was the guy that kind of helped those edge guys have the production they had. Adewale Ogunle was making plays. And then obviously in a situational role, Mark Anderson came in and had a terrific rookie year.
Good point.
And so that complement of somebody on the edge that can do it, and then somebody in the middle that can really create opportunity, is intriguing. And so again, like there's a lot of things I star in my notebook in late March and early April that is like, let's circle back to this in May and June and early July with the people that went through this processes and try to get a better feel for what was propaganda and what was actual philosophy inside the building.
Yeah, if they drafted the next Tommy Harris, I think you'd celebrate that, and you would look at that as a team that has a defense that is elite. Because I want to make sure that I'm not saying it would be a bad choice. I just don't know that it would be as exciting as a wide receiver, certainly to pair with Caleb Williams. And you know, I don't think that they would go Brock Bowers, Dan. I think the last point on the draft, I think you look at some other. You know, the NFL rumor mill is running, churning at a high speed this week. Some rumors have suggested the Bears really like Bowers. I think they'd have to trade down to get him to justify that, but I just don't see that as making a lot of sense, and it'd be a duplicate part, even though Roma Dunze would be as well, or any wide receiver. I just don't know that you would – I don't know if that makes sense for the Bears.
Well, I'll throw this at you as a counter argument. Ryan Poles comes from Kansas City. He's seen Patrick Mahomes' sixth season ascent be fueled by his most reliable pass catcher being Travis Kelce, a tight end. Tom Brady, who Caleb Williams has referenced multiple times recently as a guy he models himself after, his most reliable weapon over his 20 seasons in the league was Rob Gronkowski. And so you see a path there where you pair a guy like that with a quarterback that they can have a long, healthy relationship together, you could justify it. Colleen Kane and I have got our big board coming out later this week with 11 players that make sense at number nine. Brock Bowers is one of them. You know, there's the four defensive linemen that we've talked about, two receivers, assuming Marvin Harrison is gone, and then the four offensive linemen that we have are Joe Alt, J.C. Latham, Olu Fashanu, and Felice Fuaga. And so that's, again, when we talk about the menu you're choosing off of, like, I don't know who on that list that I just read off you're going to turn your nose up at and say, didn't really want him.
Bowers is fantastic. I just didn't envision him being a top 10 pick. I think he's between 10 and 15, more than maybe 5 and 10. But if they take him, you're right. I mean, there is precedent there. He does have that capability. I think you may diminish the value of Cole Kmet, the guy you just signed to an extension. But that's also every offseason is a different story. So I'll stay open-minded.
Don't forget about Sam Laporta here, right here in Detroit, and what he did for that Lions offense as a rookie last year and helped Jared Goff kind of propel that team to heights that they hadn't reached in a long time. So there's a case for it. I'm not saying it's my top choice, but there's certainly a case for it.
All right, so before we get out of here, that's all the draft talk. How about let's give a quick preview of what to expect noon on Wednesday at Soldier Field in the United Club when George McCaskey, Kevin Warren, and invited guests, VIPs, unveil what they think is going to be the next home of the Chicago Bears, a lakefront dome stadium. I don't know, Dan, if they're going to be able to explain how they're going to pay for it. I don't know that that's going to be something that comes up or I have a lot of detail yet. But I do know that it's odd timing. It's unorthodox to have it a day before the draft, but they also have the legislative calendar to consider, I suppose. And that's all part of this. But what should we expect on Wednesday, and what impact do you think it'll have?
Well, to that note, you and I both heard from people on Monday saying that this is sort of coincidental in some ways that this is falling right in the middle of draft week. It was really more a matter of the Bears getting their ducks in a row to make this pitch and to make it at a time when they can capitalize on the legislative session, as you mentioned, trying to create momentum there before this current session in Springfield closes down. And so time is of the essence for the Bears. Could they have waited another 10 days? Maybe. Do they want to try to get this out there as soon as possible to try to get this thing within the pipelines in Springfield in order to create momentum? We'll see. I think you and I are probably both most looking forward to the very flashy drawings that we're going to see and whatever video that they show and whoever narrates it. I don't know who that's going to be on Wednesday, but there's going to be some sizzle to this presentation. There's going to be a ton of questions, as you mentioned, that are going to need answers and follow-up. But I certainly, as just an observer from afar, am attracted to the sizzle. I want to see what this beautiful World's Fair-like campus that Kevin Warren has envisioned on the lakefront with the architecture and the shiny lake and all the things that they're planning to build down there can be. And then maybe I'll change my mind on what's best for this organization. I think you're with me that you want to see the presentation. You want to then formulate the list of questions, and then you want to hear answers from people in power on how in the world this can possibly get done.
I've never faulted the ambition. I've never believed that it's a bad idea. I think it also has to be a responsible one. We talk about, Kevin Warren is on record in one of the stories that has been written about him about talking about fiscal responsibility, and he's fiscally responsible. Well, let's find out, because $2 billion of the McCaskey's money, wherever it comes from, whether it's PSLs, the NFL, or however the White Sox are saying the Bears are coming up with that dough, we want to hear how they're going to come up with the rest of it. And I don't know if the governor isn't on board with this, how they explain that yet. I don't know where the Chicago mayor, Brandon Johnson, is on this. I think he's got a lot of other things on his mind, and certainly his plate and his standing is anything but it's shaky. It's got shaky standing in the city. So I'll be very curious to see what happens next. But you're right, there's going to be some sizzle. So let's see. And you just made me think, who could that be, the narrator? Who's going to be the narrator?
I don't know. You got somebody that works in Chicago radio with a good voice. You know anybody like that?
I don't know if Molly was busy. I don't know. I don't think he would do it. No, it'll be fun. And so Wednesday at noon, and we'll have a reaction to that, and then we'll keep on going toward Thursday's draft, where at 7:15 Chicago time around that Thursday night, the Bears will make history and change your direction, and we'll be there for it. So anything else, Dan, before we go?
Yeah. Couple quick footnotes. The annual Piccolo Awards were held at Hallis Hall on Tuesday morning. Congratulations to TJ Edwards, the veteran winner, Darnell Wright, the rookie winner for 2023, both worthy recipients. Nice to visit with those guys in the midway after that ceremony, which is always an entertaining ceremony because Patrick McCaskey reads the opening remarks and always has a couple good nuggets of history and jokes folded into there. So that's entertaining. Congrats to TJ. TJ and Darnell on that. And the other thing, tell me if you agree with this statement, because it's a little bit contradictory, but as I was getting off the plane here in Detroit and walking down, I was thinking, I can't wait to talk more about Caleb Williams in the days ahead. And I can't wait to talk about things other than Caleb Williams in the days ahead. It's sort of like two different forces pulling at you, where the actual occurrence of this draft now is going to give us another three or four or five members of this draft class that we'll have to talk about. We won't be guessing anymore. And I can't wait to get to that part of the program. And yet I can't wait to continue down this road with Caleb Williams, because I think he's a fascinating character at a fascinating time in Bears history.
Well, let's face it. I mean, that's a good way to put it. But every conversation about the Bears moving forward after Thursday night is going to, in some way, shape, or form, relate back to Caleb Williams. He is the de facto CEO of this organization the minute they draft him. And so you can be talking about your offensive line. You can be talking about your defense. You can talk about every aspect of the operation, and you're going to be able to trace it back to the quarterback, because that's what happens. Everything in Kansas City is about Patrick Mahomes. Everything in Cincinnati is about Joe Burrow. Everything in L.A. for the Chargers is about Justin Herbert. This is what happens when you draft a guy like that. So yeah, I know what you mean. We kind of want to get away from it because we want to say everything, see what everything else is about, but it's all going to come back to him.
Yeah. Well, I'll see Caleb on Wednesday at a Play 60 event in Detroit. It'll be fun to engage with him. I probably get a chance to talk to Rome as well and find out how the first flight went, and then whether he's willing to take the keys to the McCaskey jet, as you promised. So we'll see where that all heads.
I couldn't believe. So the narrator is obvious. The MVP of the score is Russ Matera, and he has got the best voice for all the voiceovers. And I was in vacation in Utah at Moab, Utah, and I was driving through downtown Moab, and I heard Russ Matera come on and tell me about probably some air conditioner or whatever it is. He's got the best voice for voiceover. So if they didn't ask Russ Matera to voice this great video, they missed an opportunity.
And then you're out. You're out on the project altogether. So
I'm out. If it's not Russ Matera, I'm out. All right. So look, let Dan get to his hotel and find Eminem later tonight. We'll talk more tomorrow about what's ahead with the stadium and the draft and all the things Bears. So for Adam Studzinski, our producer, and Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune, I am David Haw. Thank you for listening to the Take the North podcast.
Great talk. See you out there.